Ladies and gentlemen, Podcast Them Softly 2020 is a very special guest. Now, people who know me well, I have a peculiar obsession with certain movies, and one of those movies is King of the Kickboxers. And the condensed version of the story behind it is, once, many moons ago, when I had no grey hairs and was full of vim and vigour, I was on a bus in Indonesia for 18 days, and to pass the time between stops, they had three videotapes on the bus. One was Speed with Keanu Reeves and Dennis Hopper. The second movie was Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. And the third movie was a film that I hadn't seen called King of the Kickboxers, starring Lauren Abbott and Billy Blanks, Keith Cook, and my very, very special guest, Good Golly Miss Molly, Sherry Rose. Thank you for being on Podcast Them Softly.
Hi, Ken. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
It's awesome to finally talk to you. I feel like I know you so well. I have seen this film literally probably more than any two people alive.
I'm sorry.
No, I think it's fantastic. I think it has wonderful charm. Now, the interesting thing, Sherry, is that you were part of the Seasonal Pictures little cinematic universe that existed there for about 10 years. Before King of the Kickboxers, where you played Jody, who was saved by none other than Keith Vitale in No Retreat, No Surrender 3, also known as Blood Brothers.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one that Cynthia Rothrock was in?
No, it just had Keith and Lauren and
Oh yes. And then I did Deadly Fat afterwards with Cynthia Rothrock.
You know the first film I actually saw you in was Killer Crocodile.
No, oh my gosh. Someone also sent me a request to do an interview about that.
Really?
Why do people like that movie?
I don't know. I think I like big crocodile movies, but I'm from Australia, so I don't.
That's so funny.
You know,
I did a movie not long ago in Alabama, and the producer, he had all the killer crocodiles had me sign these autographs, and I was like, what? I was like, what are these things?
Why
do you like this so much? Oh yeah, Deadly Fat I did with Cynthia Rothrock.
Yeah. So setting the Wayback Machine for before King of the Kickboxers, you were obviously doing well. You'd done some, you'd done movies, you'd done some television. Was being an actress, obviously, was that always what you wanted to do, or did you start off wanting to do something else?
No, I actually wanted to be, when I was very young, I wanted to be a rock star.
Okay, cool.
And I bought a guitar. I wasn't very good. I bought a guitar at 14 years old. I still have that little Fender Stratocaster. My family wasn't very supportive of me doing that. And I ended up getting an offer to go to University of South Florida through electrical engineering program. So I ended up following that route, thinking that's what I would be doing for a living. And I worked on the sound system in the theater too there, and auditioned for a small play because it looked like it was fun.
Right.
At the same time, I was doing commercials, which got me my SAG card. I was just doing that because people had approached me to do a calendar and a poster as a model. And so I did, which led me to commercials. And then led me to do this little play on the side as I was doing the soundboard for my engineering classes.
Right.
And I kind of fell in love with acting a bit. And I loved the camaraderie of all the actors. What really drew me to it. And then I got offered Miami Vice and summer job while I was in school. And it was kind of one of those things where I had to decide whether I was going to continue on with my schooling or start my career and start doing that.
Right.
So it kind of fell more into my lap. I fell in love with acting, and I studied Shakespeare there. I did a theater troupe tour through Europe, Germany mostly, a little Italy, and Amsterdam. I kind of fell in love with that, of creating things and working with different actors and telling a story. That was really what I fell in love with.
Right.
Um, I kind of never really wanted to be an actor. I love telling stories more than anything.
Cool. So what were you up to, and sort of where were you at when King of the Kickboxers was offered to you? What were the circumstances around receiving the role, I guess?
I think I can't remember which came first, but I believe I was over doing. Yeah, I was. That did come first. I'm trying to recall. I had just moved to California.
Right.
I remember doing the smaller part and No Retreat, No Surrender.
Yeah.
I did Married with Children. I had done Married, Miami Vice. And I auditioned for a movie in Gold We Trust with Jan Michael Vincent and Sam Jones. Sam Jones being the Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon, yeah.
And I did that movie. It was a fun movie. I was in Thailand for about 3 months shooting that movie.
Right.
And that movie ended up getting pulled at customs. They didn't want that movie to come out.
Ah.
That movie was a big Kodiak movie.
Right.
Pretty big budget movie. And I don't even know if the movie ever came out, but it was. I had a great part in that film.
Right.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme wanted me to do something else that I ended up not being able to do, and then I did like something small with him in Hong Kong. And then I remember it was like, I think based on the No Retreat, No Surrender, somebody approached me, one of the director or producer, and asked, I think it was Keith, asked if I would come and do this, and I was already in Thailand, and I had to come back, kind of renew my visa or make sure that I wasn't in the country too long, and I went right back to Thailand. So I came home for maybe like a day or 2 days,
right,
and then went right back to Thailand.
Wow. So you were very familiar. This wasn't the first time in the jungle for you, so to speak.
Yeah, we went to different locations.
Right.
Because then we went more further north for King of the Kickboxers, and in Gold We Trust, we were mostly in Bangkok, and then we were in Phuket, and then we were in Phi Phi Island, where Leonardo DiCaprio shot that movie, The Island.
Oh, okay. Right.
Shot a lot there, and that was a lot of scuba diving and stuff. So.
Some beautiful.
But I was, when we were in Bangkok and stuff, I was familiar. I started having my favorite restaurants, and I knew some locals like Lek Izul, who I'd done another movie with. I'd become friendly with some people,
right,
and kind of knew my way around a bit, you know.
Right. And the incessant heat and humidity didn't bother you too much since you'd been there before?
Well, I was young then. Nothing bothered me.
Right.
You kind of can tolerate a lot when you're in your 20s, you know?
Right. But, you pop up in the movie as part of, initially, you begin with the villains. You don't begin with the, meeting the, you do meet the leading men a short time after, but the first person you encounter in the film is none other than the big villain, Khan. All the women are beautiful, you know. Billy Blanks looks like a very imposing guy. I guess it must
be. So imposing, but one of the nicest fellows you'd ever meet, you know.
Yeah.
And his wife, I came to become to know his wife and his children, and after he did Tai Bo and
right,
all that, and we used to practice all that in the jungle. He'd make me, come on, let's go work out, let's stretch, let's work out. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do martial arts anymore.
Right.
And we kind of did a lot of blending of exercises, and him later coming back and creating Tai Bo, which was obviously a great success for him and his family.
Right, sure. But you, Molly the character, and I guess there's always parts of oneself that translate over into the character. I mean, you were good at sort of the running and screaming and looking like, oh gosh, what's going to happen to me? But Molly wasn't really much of a pushover, because in a later sequence, you know, you're in there with the knee and you throw that dude off the bridge, and you know, she's not completely helpless. I mean, I know, of course, that you get trapped in the net at the end, but she's pretty resourceful, Molly. I mean, you go looking and you eventually find him and all that sort of thing. Was that in the script, or is that something that you contributed?
Well, I think that with any role I bring, I think I do walk with a strength to myself, and
right.
I think that will show through in the characters that I play, regardless of what's on the page.
Right, right.
And it's probably what they wanted in the casting, that yes, they want a blonde, blue-eyed girl that can act, but they also want someone that can walk with that strength. So that's
typically
how I think the parts that would come to me, those characters have that, both parts of that, they're living them. So that shines through, whether it's on the page or not. So I do think there was some good writing there, and there was layers.
Right. I know scripts are in a constant state of flux. Did the script that you initially read, was that pretty much the film that they shot, or was there a lot of...
Well, there's always changes on set, and I know kind of like what Lauren was talking about, you know, as you're on set, and things will change, and things will morph into things, but I always say that there's three scripts. There's one that are written, there's ones that you shoot, and the one that gets edited that finally comes out, and there will be, you know, variations all along before you come to the final product.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I've never kind of sat by with any movie I've done or TV show that I've done, sat by and went, oh, verbatim, did that kind of come out? I think you kind of, there's also pacing that gets involved with editing.
Right,
you know,
sure.
I look back on the movie Me and Will that I made, but the movie that came out isn't the movie I wrote.
Yeah.
Isn't the movie I shot. And if I had a chance to go back and re-edit that movie again, it would be a completely different movie.
Right.
Because I would change the pacing and what I would keep in and what I would leave out.
Right, sure. So, I mean, with King of the Kickboxers, you are you're a foreigner in a foreign land, I've always been curious. When Jake comes over to your apartment after saving you from the street thugs, he goes through, it looks like folio photographs, modeling photographs. Were they prepared for the film, or are they actually your own personal? Did they say, oh, do you have any, like, modeling photographs, you know, for him to peruse while you were, you know, taking a shower, and then you come back and you have the, you know,
I think they used a little bit of both. I don't remember exactly which ones they used. I'd have to go back and take a peek at that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they had some big glamour shots, and then it looked like, you know, headshots that you would have for auditioning, I suppose, and all that sort of thing. So.
Right. I probably contributed to some of that. I would imagine.
Right.
Oh, there, you know?
Sure. But I mean, so you get to stay relatively free of the jungle for a little bit until you eventually find Jake out there training with Keith. I guess we should talk about these two guys, because you spend a bulk of the film doing scenes with them. One, Keith Cook. Now, Keith Cook is the real deal. I mean, the stuff that he does in that film, he's not being held up by wires and all that sort of stuff like they do in The Matrix. Keith Cook is the real deal. What's Keith Cook, the man, not the martial arts master, like? What's the guy like away from there?
Well, I enjoyed spending time. Keith and I spent a lot of time off set just going to dinner, and we were in remote places, so as I did with Billy Blanks, I mean, we didn't have a lot of, you know, there's nobody around, you're in the middle of a jungle.
Sure.
There's a tiny little hotel and the place to eat, and you end up getting pretty close to your co-stars. I think he's a gentleman, and I really respected him as an athlete.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And dedicated to his craft. He was an amazing martial artist. I grew up watching Bruce Lee movies. I always loved martial arts. I started doing martial arts when I was 10.
Right.
I was being bullied. I started taking, which is actually what got me into making these movies. I had started Taekwondo when I was 10 years old because I had a bully when I lived in Hartford, Connecticut. And my mom took me to learn how to defend myself. And when I auditioned, maybe for No Retreat, No Surrender, one of those movies, I was goofing off in front of the elevator after reading for like a girly part.
Yeah.
And I rode my motorcycle that day. I had my helmet. Oh, no, I didn't have my helmet. I just had all my leathery gear. At the time, I didn't use a helmet back in the day. I had my Harley Davidson, but we didn't have to use helmets back then. There was no helmet law.
Okay.
Anyway, I was doing like a little sparring in front of the elevator, and one of the producers saw me, and he said, "Oh, you didn't tell me you did martial arts." I said, "Well, it didn't come up in the meeting. You know, I didn't think he wanted me for that bit." And he said, "Well, that's interesting." So that kind of led me into doing some of those other martial art movies that I did.
Mm.
I don't know, my friend Jeb Nelson used to always say every title that had force or kick has Sherry in it. He's like, "You should just make a movie called Force to Kick."
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
But I forgot the question. I'm sorry. I went off on a tangent.
You're right. You're right. No. But you said, well, Keith Cook, obviously, a wonderful man.
Oh, yes. So
you're right.
I studied and you know, had learned somewhat about the martial arts, certainly not like Warren and Billy and Keith, but I had known it. He just said he could do these flips and these kicks and these flips, and it's just like, what? You know, just watching someone at the top of their game doing something.
Sure.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you think about the, I often think about the triple kick that Keanu Reeves does in The Matrix, and having seen the making of it, you know that he was hoisted up and on wires and had to do it in the time that he had to make it look believable. But you see Keith Cook do exactly the same kick in King of the Kickboxers, and there are no wires.
no wires.
There are no wires holding Keith up, and that's commendable. That's athleticism on a different plane.
I have to say, knowing Keanu since 1989, I think when we first met.
Oh, wow.
He knew I did martial arts. And he did a small part in the movie Me and Will that I directed. But he loved that I did martial arts. And Keanu's always been a big fan of martial arts and people that can really do it and fight. So.
Yeah. He's doing very well for himself at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got the bases loaded, that chap. He's got the bases absolutely loaded. So from Keith Richards, we turn to Jake, who's your leading man, Lauren Avedon. Lauren's a great bloke. Obviously, we've had a chat. We actually had a chat about more than King of the Kickboxers. We had a chat about all the seasonal films that he did. A very nice man. What was he like to work with? Just as gentlemanly as Keith, I suppose.
Well, I appreciate Lauren's professionalism and wanting to make the movie better every step of the way.
Right.
I feel like he was very dedicated his career. I don't know what he's doing now.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he's still making movies. And
right.
And not that I don't know for any other reason, but just because I'm doing, you know, a lot of girly movie stuff.
Right.
But I'm kind of doing, went into the independent film world more. Make movies for Sundance and stuff like that.
Right.
But he was always, always tried to make the script better, always tried to make the scene better.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was dedicated to doing that, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, he was very concerned. I mean, when we did talk, he talked a lot about, he said some of the conditions weren't that good as far as getting people the necessities. Like, he said that he a number of times had to pay for drinks for the crew because it was sometimes they were working such long hours, and there wasn't because they were such remote locations, there wasn't always readily available refreshments and all that. Is that your recollection?
Sometimes we did not have the basic needs of food or water for
right
sure.
Yeah.
And there would have to be, and you know, when I was there before, same with Sam Jones would advocate for the crew and the cast. And as I think Lauren touched on in the previous podcast, is that, you know, there wasn't the Global One SAG rule at the time.
Right.
So there were no SAG rulings. So if they want to get you at the hotel at 4 in the morning, bring you to set and your true makeup, and you're on set by 5:30, you know, shooting, to get first picture up when the sun's up. And they want to work you till the sun goes down. And if you're working in the summer hours and the sun's not going down till 8 o'clock at night, and you're not even getting a 10-hour turnaround to go home, shower, get dinner, sleep, and come back to set.
Mm.
And when you're on set, you're in remote places, it's very difficult for them to bring lunches and food and waters. And there's not like a bunch of coolers sitting around. They're running down to the drugstore and getting ice and sodas, right?
No.
So they're bringing it in, and they're bringing it on jeeps and trucks and stuff like that. And they're going to, of course, feed the actors first.
Yeah.
Because we need to be on camera, so they want us to look good and, you know, as refreshed as possible. And then the crew will, so, I mean, I often would forgo my meal or share it with somebody and say, hey, I'm good, or until those people eat, I'm not going to eat. You know, we have to kind of make a stance and make sure everyone's taken care of.
Yeah. Delicate question. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but... Lauren brought up, there of course is the scene, Molly and Jake have you know, in the timeline of the story, have only met, haven't known each other long, but by the time he leaves to go off to the final fight, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I mean, there's dialogue to the effect, you know, what about us? Like, you know, there's there's a magical relationship that is formed in a relatively short space of time. But Thai body massages. Lauren brought up of the scene, it was, and I imagine this to be the same, I've talked to enough actors now to know that when you are in a relationship with someone away from, I mean, he himself said that he had just began a new relationship with somebody else. So doing romantic sequences, such as they are, can be difficult in that aspect. I know it's not a terribly gratuitous love scene. What was your whole, you know, your takeaway from doing, you know, that kind of thing, you know, the getting into the giant, it looks like a big soup pot.
Well, it's always uncomfortable to do kissing somebody or trying to be romantic with somebody when you know, you're either with somebody else or, you know, you're not with that person.
Right.
You're acting. You're acting and you're trying to create a chemistry and create something that feels right. I mean, all actors, you know, from, you know, Meryl Streep on down, where everyone's, you know, forced, that's part of the gig, right?
Right.
You get a cry about a baby that you haven't lost or be in love with somebody that you're not in love with.
Right,
That's the challenge. Yeah. I feel like Lauren was the gentleman. He helped me where I was like, oh, I don't want to show too much here. I don't want to do this. And I feel like he's the gentleman in that and helped, you know, protect the integrity of the scene.
Sure.
And protect me as an actress and a woman. And I appreciated that.
So really, in a lot of ways, it comes down to your acting partner in the scene and being able to trust them. And know that they have your best interests in mind as well as, yes, we are meant to be acting, but I don't want you to do anything that you don't completely feel uncomfortable doing.
Yeah, there's always, I mean, right now there's new rulings that are coming in that I forget what they're called. I think they're called the intimate coach or something like that. I may be wrong on that phrase.
Right.
But they're hiring people now to be on set, so when someone's doing a love scene, there's someone in the room that helps monitor that, because it is challenging, as usually it's the female that has to expose more than the male. And, you know, there's always that challenge of, like, how far are they going to try to push you? What do they want you to show? And you trying to hold on to, like, well, that doesn't feel right for me, or I understand that might make sense to the scene, but I'm not comfortable doing that, or there's too many people on set, and you can't really create that intimacy. And that's always, you try to have as much fun with it and make fun of it as much as you can.
Right.
It's just never comfortable.
Right, yeah.
You know,
to keep it,
you're trying to make it look sexy and romantic, but it just isn't.
Right, yeah. But you've got to sort of keep it light, too, because it can't be too serious, right? You can't really
you can't
really go to that place of great intensity.
No.
Just the illusion of great intensity.
Exactly.
Yes. So we come along to the massive, like you said, the Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome ending, which unfortunately you spend a great deal of in a net. How long did you spend up in that net? Just curious.
Well, enough that I said, can I get down and go to the bathroom?
Okay, right, right. So they just put you in there and left you there, did they?
It's that fine line where I played superheroes before, like Black Scorpion. I played a character Aftershock.
Right, yeah,
they
put
me in this tiny, tiny outfit, and they squeeze me in it, and then you're really hot, and then you want to drink water, but you don't want to drink water because you know you're going to have to get untied and then go to the bathroom and then get tied back, and you're going to hold up. I don't want to hold up the crew. I don't want to hold up the fight sequence. I don't want to hold up anything, so I'm just going to not drink water and not go to the bathroom.
Right.
But you're in there sweating and not going, I need water.
Right,
that's
sure.
That fine line. Just trying to have that courtesy, not be, you know, make sure that you're taking care of everybody, not being a prima donna on set, and just do what you can to go along, get along, be a team player.
Yeah.
You know, make sure everyone gets what they need by the end of the day.
Incidentally, I love your character's name. You mentioned Black Scorpion there. Ursula Undershaft.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great... Not just Ursula Undershaft, sorry. Professor Ursula Undershaft. Very good.
I really liked that character. Yeah,
she was good.
Really fun to play. I got to do a little bit of my science-y engineering stuff, which actually lives inside of me. I'm a closet nerd.
I know.
And then I got to... And I'm also a closet fighter.
I know. I mean, it totally... You seemed... Out of all the stuff I've seen you do, you oddly seem the most comfortable doing that part, because it's a little bit of both parts of your secret superpowers that you have that you don't get.
Well,
to...
I have to say I'm a bit of a right fighter. You know?
Right.
I like the fright. I'm a bit of a fighter for the underdogs. I have a lot of rescue animals.
Right.
You know, I'm somebody that likes to fight for what's the right thing to do.
Sure.
And what is the right way?
Yeah, but that last fight sequence in the film has over the years become. I mean, while the film has a cult status, I've certainly seen a lot of articles and films and websites that centrifugally focus on action films and action sequences in films. It is slowly becoming a much lauded action fight sequence, because you have two very capable martial artists going full tilt boogie there while you are precariously dangling in the net. One little thing I did notice, Molly, it's not a criticism or anything like that, and maybe you know, maybe you don't know. Again, between the two of us, there's one of us that has seen this movie more than the other. For obvious reasons.
Yeah,
but,
I'm sure you've seen it more than I have.
Yeah, but... there are two moments while you are hanging, and I do know that some of these there's a lot of ADR in some of these films after the fact, but twice during the last sequence, instead of Jake, you call Lauren Jack. Are you aware, or do you know?
No,
or?
I'm not aware.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. It's
that'll go down in trivia.
I know.
That's
yeah, it's it. Look, it, yeah, it's
yeah,
complete.
You're
yeah,
it wrong.
It's not. Like I said, it's not a criticism. It's, and really, when you watch it the first time, you don't really pick it up. But and I don't know whether.
I'm kind of embarrassed of that. I apologize.
No, don't be embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed, because it sounds like, because your mouth isn't moving. So someone has. I'm guessing someone has dubbed, or they've done like a trick. Did you have to do any looping? Did you go back and do any looping for it? Do you know?
I feel like I have done some looping, and then I know they loop me in other languages.
Right, right. So
they dub me.
That's where it could have. I'm guessing that's where it could have happened, because the voice when it is said doesn't sound like your voice, because you have a slightly deeper voice than the shrieking voice that. I mean, I know you. I mean. I'm not saying you're a girl who doesn't know how to scream. You scream very well. But,
Thank you. You
know, I'm just... there's some parts in the film, even parts with Keith and Lauren, where it sounds like they either looped themselves or they've been looped. So, you know, because I know a lot of those... a lot of the Chinese are like the Italian filmmakers. They shoot without sound for speed reasons most of the time, and come back and everyone has to loop their dialogue. I mean, was that your experience in making films over there?
It's funny because it's interesting because I did 3 movies for the Italians.
Right.
King Killer Crocodile.
Yeah.
And then I did, I think, 3 movies for, I guess, the other guy was from, you know, shot in Thailand. I guess one production company from Hong Kong, the other was Thai. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme, I think those people were Hong Kong too, as well. But I have not done MLS movies. We were always fighting with sound, with, you know, whether we wearing a wireless mic or being boomed. Certainly things like King of Crocodiles, and I think there were microphones hidden. We were, being mic'd back in the day, the wireless mics didn't work all that well. You know, their battery always dropped off, or, you know, your shirt is making a noise. You know, it's hard to capture sound when you're doing action.
Yes, yes.
Mm. It's gotten better because microphones have gotten better. Right?
Yeah, sure. But so the cult of King of the Kickboxers, has it been something that has been obvious to you, or were you completely unaware that it has a relatively strong cult following?
No, I had no idea.
Okay.
I would imagine they are gravitating more towards Lauren and Billy and Keith.
All right.
Right?
Yeah. Oh no, but I mean, you've never been approached like at a convention or something to give an autograph of something.
I have done conventions, and I honestly, there's a lot of ways that I think people try to reach me that I don't. That I just. Like I said with you, I finally saw the messenger after 4 years.
Right.
I wish I should have responded to that. Oh, that would have been fun.
Well, like I said, you're a busy lady. You can't. I didn't expect you to drop everything to talk to me, but I'm very glad you did. Before I let you go, I nearly called you Molly. Then, sorry, Sherry.
Hey, listen, I respect Jake, Jack. You know, we all get things.
Yeah.
I appreciate you being a fan of the movie and that there is a cult following. I don't know. You know, anytime you do something, you never know how it's going to turn out, and you just go in trying to do the best you can. And
Incidentally, while I've got you, I was reading a very interesting article because Tales of the Crypt, not only the series, but there was an article the other day I read about Demon Knight, and that has quite a hefty cult following around that film. And you were in Demon Knight, weren't you, as Wanda?
I was. I was in more of that movie, and the beginning, my character all got cut out. So I don't know if they ever put my scenes back in like the extended DVDs and stuff like that, because there's a whole story with Billy Zane. And before we meet Jada Pinkett Smith and all that, and then that whole beginning of the movie got cut out.
Right,
so
right.
You see me just in the diner in the beginning of it, and then I went to the premiere of that, and I was like, hey, where's my part?
Right, right, yeah.
I mean, I was in there, but I was in that. I shot a lot more scenes. I mean, great, I got paid, I get residuals because they have to pay you for the time that you're on set, not how long you're on screen, thankfully.
Right.
It was interesting to see how they changed it. Again, going back to, you know, what you read and what you shoot and what gets edited are 3 different movies.
Really?
So you don't really know. And I did 2 Tales from the Crypt. That franchise was, you know, that was good. They hired me 3 different times.
Mm.
I had a lot of repeat offenders of people that hire me over and over again.
Yeah.
Same directors and same production companies type of thing. So that's nice. I show up on time and do what's asked of me, and I try to do the best I can while I'm there.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things about that is in Only Skin Deep, one of the episodes in Tales of the Crypt you're in, you play Molly yet again, but she's not the same Molly.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize that. Maybe that's my alter ego. I love doing that movie Only Skin Deep because I didn't have a face.
Right.
I had and it's so freeing to act without worrying about how you look.
Right, right. You know, yeah, because I've heard that actors, when they wear like some sort of mask or a prosthetic or a wig even or something, a mustache or, you know, you know, it's very liberating because you kind of let some of that do the work, let the makeup do the, you know, is that
you let some of it do the work, but the other aspect of it is that I think all of us have things that we don't like about our face, or we don't like the way we look, or something, right? Like everybody has something like that, right?
Yeah.
So when you have like a prosthetic, or like with that, I had a whole prosthetic face, and I had eyes that were contacts that were black.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And in it, it just sounds so freeing because it was really just being able to really just touch into more of my emotional strength there and the character, and not so much worried about like, oh gosh, is that my good angle or do I look good here? You know, we all get caught up in that. You know, whether you're an actor or not, but when you're an actor and you know that's going to live forever, you go, oh gosh, you know, I hope I look my best, or I hope I'm not beating myself up too much about how I don't look good there, you know? So it's so freeing to have that, I found.
Sherry, you've been an absolute trooper. It's been a real pleasure. My final question, if you can stretch back in your memory, if you have any recollection at all, one of the most quotable lines from King of the Kickboxers is, you're not yet in the net, but Billy is kind of, it looks like he's carrying you under one arm. And he has Keith in a bag. And he throws Keith's body in the water. And Lauren has this incredibly intense, dramatic line, let the girl go. I just wondered, from purely a geek's, a fan's perspective, did he do it more than once? And if so, what was that like, watching him do that line that day on the set? Were you present? Did you see it? Did you hear it? All that sort of stuff.
All that time was very intense. And he was carrying me and having to pick me up and carry me. He was actually doing that.
Right.
Very intense shooting out there. I'm not, I don't remember how many times Lauren did it, but I know he gave it his all and it was in very intense one.
It became a great catchphrase for us on the bus all those many years ago. So much so that when we finally got off, we seemed to have these great stretches where we were on there for quite a long period because there was so much distance between the places we were going. So finally one day when we got off the bus, my friend William Hunt, if he's out there listening, William, this one's for you. He got off the bus and there were some local guys starting to sort of harass and whistle at some of the girls who were with us, and he took exception to this when one of them came over and tried to put his arm around this girl that he was particularly fond of and didn't want to have anyone doing such things. So he jumped from the bus steps and landed between the girl and this guy and said, "Let the girl go!" And thus the cult of King of the Kickboxers was born, and we were doing that for any reason, anytime there was a reason. And I know how silly this sounds ridiculous, but for any opportunity that we had to jump out and say that line, we did it hard for 18 days. It seemed like there was a channel with nothing but King of the Kickboxers on it. And at least it was air-conditioned and we were in heaven. And I thank you very much for having a chat with me, Molly, from King of the Kickboxers, the girl that Lauren wanted Billy to let go, has been my guest, Sherry Rose. Thank you very much. Would you like to have a go at the line? Would you like to do it for us? Go on. Oh, well done. There you go. Sherry Rose, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Sherry. It's been a real, absolute, real great time. I'm very glad that you've given it to us today. It's a great gift. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for reaching out, and Ben, thanks for doing what you're doing, and I love that you enjoy movies. It's awesome.
Thank you very much again. I wish you all the best for it with all the projects and stuff you've got on. You said you were shooting something yesterday. Is it a movie, a TV show?
Yeah. That's just some videos for a campaign for a company, Barefoot Dreams, and their collaboration with Disney.
Cool.
We're just shooting some, like, kind of little mini segments.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you've been doing writing and directing. You say you got any more projects of your own you're trying to get off the ground?
Yeah, I just finished writing a baseball movie called Left Field.
Awesome.
That I'm inking. And
awesome.
See if I stay aboard as a director or not.
Cool.
Depends on who comes on board. That's kind of the next project that's here in March. I'll be shooting in Malibu.
Awesome.
There's a cute little kid's baseball movie, PG. So, fun.
Awesome. Sherry, you're a very talented lady. I wish you nothing but the best. And you know what's beautiful about signing off on this interview is I get to say the line again. I'm going to let the girl go!
Oh,